Welcome back to Backbone Radio. By this point, you know who we are, so I won't introduce us again. I want to talk a little bit about what the meaning is of this election, what we think it is, and perhaps what our political opposition thinks it is. There's a very good article in Reason magazine over at reason.com by Denver's own David Harsanyi, who I believe is the best writer in Colorado. And it's a, you know, the headline is "A Vote Against Government." And I encourage you to go read it for yourself. But the headline basically speaks for itself. David concludes that in many ways, 2012 portends to be a more consequential year than 2010, in which either the country continues to trend in the direction of limited government ideals, or the massive bureaucratic institutions built in the past 2 years will be cemented for the long run. No matter what happens for now, we can look forward to two glorious years of hyper-partisan, acrimonious gridlock, Washington's most moral and productive state. I love that line, and I agree with it. Now, that's the point of view of a libertarian-leaning conservative on the elections. Here is the point of view of Bill Press, writing at The Hill. Bill Press is a left-leaning journalist who, I think, is involved with public television mostly. Anyway, he's sort of well-known on the left. And I'm going to read this whole thing to you. It's not very long, and it gives you a really good insight into how the left thinks. And the reason I think this is important is I think this informs, you know, what conservatives and Republicans need to be thinking about, what candidates going into 2012 need to be thinking about. So this is Bill Press wrote this the day after the election. "Even before Tuesday's midterm elections, a lot of adjectives were used to describe American voters today: frustrated, disappointed, angry, betrayed. Looking at the results, I suggest there are two adjectives missing: fickle and dumb. Voters are fickle indeed. Yes, they want change, but it seems they want change simply for the sake of change. This is, after all, the third, quote-unquote, change election in a row. Putting Democrats in charge of the House in 2006, electing a Democrat president in 2008, now putting Republicans back in charge of the House in 2010, which is a recipe for getting nothing done. Americans treat elections the way couch potatoes treat television. Tired of watching this show? Hit the clicker. 5 minutes later, bored again? Hit the clicker. How else to explain the fact that millions of Americans elected Barack Obama in 2008 to lead this country in a new direction and then decided 20 months later to go back where we came from? How else to explain it except to point out that Americans are also dumb? If we really want to get something done, we can't change teams every 2 years. If we really want any president to move this country forward, we've got to give him more than 2 years to get things done before deciding to go backward. It makes you wonder whether it's even possible to govern this country today, and it's not, as long as voters remain so fickle and so dumb." So Bill Press called American voters dumb three times in this very short article that is filled with all kinds of other left-wing code words: progress, moving forward, so on, lead the country in a new direction. Rich Sokol, I know you had not read or heard this before. I just read it. What's your reaction when you hear that, and especially in terms of what it makes you think about political strategy going forward?
Well, let me say, I think I probably agree with one of his terms and disagree with the other. If you define fickle as meaning change, yes, clearly, you know, the results speak for themselves. We have had three change elections in the last three cycles, but to call voters dumb, I think, is absolutely wrong. I think what's going on here is voters had a sense in 2008 that the country was headed in the wrong direction. You know, whether it's because of the wars or clearly the economy was getting worse, the debt was mounting, people stood up and say, "Hey, guys, what you're doing ain't working. So if it ain't working, let's change teams. Let's change the guys on the ball field." So that's what they did. Now, for the last 2 years, you've had Democrats in control of everything by the biggest majorities they've ever had. So voters, once again, rather than being dumb, were smarter than said, "Hey, instead of making things better, Democrats, you just made them a hell of a lot worse. You know, unemployment's a hell of a lot worse. We've got trillions more in debt. What the heck are you guys doing?" So, you know, those guys that we thought were dumb, you were going to fix it? Well, guess what? We screwed up. We're the dumb ones. So now we're kicking you out. Let's go back to the other guys. And, you know, hopefully they get the message this time, and Republicans get the message and do something about the debt.
Greg, what does it mean to you when you hear a relatively well-known liberal commentator call voters dumb three times because of this election?
Well, that's what you say when you lose. They're obviously, you know, if you lose, they were dumb or they weren't well informed or something along those lines. I got to tell you, you know, I think voters, no, they're not as well informed as they ought to be. Although I think the Tea Party movement has more people more informed than they have traditionally been in this country. But when you look at like the ballot initiatives in Colorado, for instance, anything that I don't think they did a lot of in-depth research on them. But anything that struck them as unnecessary or too risky, they just voted against it.
You know, didn't everything fail except for the seat of government?
Yeah, the seat of government, when you looked at it, and it didn't pass overwhelmingly, but it passed with, you know, a substantial margin. I think, again, people look at these titles and they think to themselves, does this make sense or does this not? And if it doesn't, and it doesn't strike them as something that makes sense quickly, they're going to vote against. I mean, the tax question or whatever it was that really should have passed because it was a smart, it was good policy. It should have passed. No money spent on either side of it to speak of. So it's just kind of like an acid test. It looked too confusing. People didn't understand what was meant by that. They did understand that these other tax ones that did have $5 or $6 million, well, $6 million of actual money spent that we know of, plus in-kind contributions that probably triple that amount when you think about the total number of people around the state of Colorado, like me, who went around speaking against those things. They failed. They probably just lumped it together with arson as a tax question that they didn't understand, so they just voted no. You know, I don't think it's that they are stupid. I think it's that they may not be well informed. And you know, just an observation from watching politics around the world. I've been fortunate enough to teach political science classes at the community college. And if you study what happened in Japan, the ruling party, and I don't mean they're Democrat, whatever party in Japan that stayed in power for 40 some odd years, mostly stayed in power because they didn't do a darn thing. And times were pretty good, and they managed to not rile anybody to speak of and kind of kept it running on an even keel. Now, if you run on change and actually try to change things, you might just tick people off. And then and if the economy's bad like it is this time, they're probably going to toss you out on your ear. And I think that's likely what happened here to the Democrats. We're a center-right country. They went hard left in a way that was somewhat offensive to people, for instance, with how the health care bill was passed and the financial regulatory bill was passed, 2,000 pages apiece that nobody will admit to having actually read and understood. And then you find out later what was in them. I think people were mad about that, to be sure. And I don't think that says dumb. I think that says we'll pay enough attention that when you're doing things that really matter, we're going to find out what you did.
You know, I think the dumb ones are the politicians who believe that a victory by them means they have a mandate. And I think all politicians, they tend to learn the wrong lesson. They tend to believe that they were voted in mostly because the public likes them. And I don't remember in what article I just read it, but it was W.C. Fields is quoted in this article as saying, I never voted for anybody. I always vote against them. And I think that's basically what happens typically in elections. And in the mid-2000s, in the 2004 campaign, especially when Republicans made their signature issue gay marriage, they won on that. And then I guess Karl Rove started thinking, well, you know, they love us and our focus on social issues. And they started thinking more about that kind of stuff, and it didn't work. And then Democrats win, and they think, "Whoa, this is a mandate for our far left stuff." And then that didn't work. And it's incredible to me how, especially the left, though, the right doesn't make the mistake as much in terms of the talking heads of calling the people stupid. I think it is a particular characteristic of the progressive left to think that they, the liberal elite, are smarter than everyone else and needs to be running our lives. Rich, you got 30 seconds.
Sure. I just want to say we all remember, you know, Ronald Reagan's famous ad, you know, when he ran against Jimmy Carter, and he said, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago after 4 years of Jimmy Carter?" And that was the signature statement of his campaign. And, you know, I think you're right that people may not understand the niceties or the nuances of every issue or every ballot measure, but people have a sense deep in their gut, are things getting better or are things getting worse? And if things getting better, the incumbent wins. And if things are getting worse, the incumbent loses. And that's what we've seen the last two elections.
Right. Except with Michael Bennett, where, as we've talked about, something happened where the incumbent, who, in my view, and not just because he's a Democrat, was just a terrible senator. You know, having to getting permission to vote and then getting permission to change his vote. This guy does not represent Colorado, but, you know, it's water under the bridge. He's now elected instead of appointed. Stay with us. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk a little bit more about both state and national politics. Feel free to join the conversation, 303-696-1971. We'll be right back.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get?
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. Wanted to let you know, again, as I mentioned in the first hour, Ryan Call, who is counsel to the Colorado Republican Party and Denver chair of the Republican Party, and I will be guests at Liberty on the Rocks, the Red Rocks version of Liberty on the Rocks, on Monday, November 15th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at a kind of a happy hour thing at Old Chicago, 145 Union Boulevard in Lakewood at the Upstairs Bar. So if you want to talk politics, say hello, please join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think Ryan and I will not be doing a lot of speechifying. It'll more be just Q&A and just conversation about politics, much like what we're doing on this show right now. One thing I want to mention, John Boehner, presumably Speaker of the House in January, wrote an interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal on November 5th, so Friday, entitled "What the Next Speaker Must Do." And I just want to give you a few of the bullet points because, you know, if Boehner and the Republicans stick to this, I think they'll do pretty well in 2012. And if they don't stick to this, I think they're going to have some issues. So I'm not going to read all the detail, but just the headlines of the bullet points. No earmarks. Let Americans read bills before they are brought to a vote. No more quote-unquote comprehensive bills. So, and I'll just read a little detail here. The next Speaker of the House should put an end to so-called comprehensive bills with thousands of pages of legislative text that make it easy to hide spending projects. So let's see. So basically he wants smaller bills that are more narrowly focused, even if it means multiple bills to deal with a wide subject area. No more bills written behind closed doors in the Speaker's office. And that's the last bullet point. Boehner closes his article by saying the American people deserve a majority in Congress that listens to the people, focuses on their priorities, and honors their demands for smaller, more accountable government. Accountability starts at the top in the office of the Speaker. Rich Sokol, what's your level of optimism that the Republicans will stick with these sorts of good government and small government principles and policies that Boehner is talking about?
Well, Ross, I'd have to say, you know, it's mixed. If you look at the history of the Republican Party, there's not a great room for optimism here. You know, someone once described the Republican Party as being the Democrats' light, or, you know, if the Democrats were on the road to socialism, Republicans were on the slow road to socialism, but the road to socialism nonetheless. So, you know, we've been just as bad as the other guys, I think, when it comes to some of the rules and the procedures that we've used. So what we have different today, of course, is the Tea Party. And what we have is the individual Americans who are rising up and saying, enough, stop. And they're actually talking about the debt. When's the last time you heard individual Americans, their number one issue is the level of national debt? It's really amazing to me. So I hope that Republicans have gotten the message. You know, certainly Boehner's comments are encouraging. With that said, though, you know, you and I focus a lot on economics. And so I follow closely Paul Ryan, the representative from Indiana, who's written the roadmap the Roadmap for America. And that is the first and only really thoughtful blueprint I've seen for reforming some of our entitlement programs and getting America's fiscal situation back on track. And what really surprises me is when I looked and said, how many fellow Republicans have co-sponsored the legislation? Do you know what the answer is?
You tell me.
13 Republicans out of over 170 in the House of Representatives have co-sponsored Representative Ryan's Roadmap for America. Now, the argument was, well, you know, we're talking about limiting the entitlement programs, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. So, you know, we don't really want to talk about that before the election because we want to win the election. But, you know, trust me, after the election, then everyone will come on board. Well, you know, that's not very encouraging to me, but we'll see. I hope Republicans have gotten the message. I hope people get on board behind the Roadmap for America, or use that at least as a starting point for serious reform of our budget.
And they're not going to have much choice but to at least pay attention to the roadmap, because Paul Ryan will be chairman of the Budget Committee in the House, and he knows the budget better than anybody else in Washington, D.C. Greg Brophy, what's your take when you hear, you know, what John Boehner says he wants to do? Do you believe him? Do you think they'll follow through with it? And do you think it's necessary that they follow through with it if we want to elect a Republican president in 2012?
Well, I'm fairly confident they will follow through with it. When you think back to 1994 and the contract with America, Newt Gingrich and the Republicans that took over that time followed through in the first 100 days and passed almost everything that was listed in the contract with America. They lost their way in the second and fourth and sixth terms after they initially won. I mean, they came in all fired up and ready to go and did exactly what they said they were going to do in the first 100 days when they came in. And I expect Boehner to do exactly the same thing. I expect him to come in, do what they said they were going to do, and then start to fall back into the swamp of Washington, D.C. and likely go back to their old ways until they gradually lose enough seats that they fall out of the majority again and have to get kicked in the backside to come back to you know, their roots and their base and earn the support of the voters. And you know what? The one thing about, you know, I don't know about fickle, but certainly the voters in the United States and in Colorado have short memories. They cannot remember more than a couple of years back about how bad someone is. So, you know, the Democrats are going to try to ride the George Bush way for a while, but I think people would say, George who now at this point? I mean, Barack Obama is president, and you're making a mistake if you don't focus on the here and now when you're trying to run races. And you think about Paul Ryan, you talk about races. How, you know, remember the ads that were run against Ken Buck when they would take a snippet out of context that his support for the national, you know, the fair tax, the national sales tax, and not tell the whole truth behind it? Well, guess what? They'll do the exact same thing to you if you come out supporting Paul Ryan's roadmap, because they'll take that one part that you have to do to balance the budget related to Social Security, and they will ride that horse until that thing is, you know, run its legs out from underneath it, and the mail pieces and the negative ads will, and they work, and they will come out of the woodwork and use it against you if you do what it is you have to do to actually balance our budget and get back on track.
Well, and usually the fear of that sort of thing that is real, and you're exactly right, usually that sort of fear is what drives this desire for so-called bipartisanship that we hear about all the time. Bipartisanship means, if you go look it up in the political dictionary, bipartisanship means conservatives moving towards a liberal position. It means nothing else ever. It never means a liberal moving towards a conservative position. So when you hear all this talk about compromise, remember that calls for compromise only come from the left and only serve the left. I heard a very, very interesting interview with Eric Cantor, congressman from Virginia, nice Jewish boy, who is going to be the number two man in the House of Representatives, the minority leader. And he said in an interview on Fox News, majority leader, not minority leader, majority leader, that if Barack Obama suggests that Obama would go along with making tax cuts permanent for all but the upper bracket and make them and extend them for a few years for the upper bracket, would you go along with that? Cantor said, no, I don't want them decoupled. And then the interviewer asked Cantor, would you go along with extending all of the tax cuts, including the upper brackets, for a limited number of years? And he said no to that as well. He said they should all be permanent. He did not sound like he was in a very compromising mood. I hope they stick with that, and I hope that they don't have too much fear of exactly what Greg Brophy was talking about with the negative ads. More on this when we come back after this break.